0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, October 21st, 2015. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kiss for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chetchesko. And Chet, the Eagles are tied for first place after 6 weeks, and the Flyers are playing pretty good hockey, and now the NBA season is about to get started.
Yeah, all that's true, Bill, but for most people, there is still a wait-and-see attitude, I think, about both the Flyers and Sixers. And regarding the Eagles, well, even after back-to-back 20-point wins, you have people calling for a quarterback change. Wild stuff.
Well, and today we're going to get to talk a lot of Eagles, and we're going to even talk more Sixers as the NBA season gets ready to kick off with our special guest, making his return appearance to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, Calkins Media 76ers beat writer Tom Moore. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be back, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right. Ready to roll, Bill?
Let's go, Chet. Take it over.
All right. As Bill mentioned, Tom, lots of Sixers talk ahead. But first, a little football talk. I mean, heck, the Eagles, even with a quarterback that a lot of fans would like to see benched, have somehow made it to the top of the NFC East. What is your take on this team and Sam Bradford? He of the 9 interceptions through 6 games.
Yeah, Chad, it sort of seemed to be somewhat of a progression the 2 previous weeks. It seemed like he was getting more comfortable, you know, playing better, being a little less sort of antsy in the pocket. And then Monday night, was down there covering, and it looked like he regressed, which is the reason that I would be somewhat concerned, because it seemed like things were going in the right direction, albeit slowly. Just not getting feet set, underthrowing, arm strength, just things that you sort of wondering what's going on here. But the defense has been tremendous. I mean, who'd have thought coming in this year that, the defense would carry, would carry the Eagles. I mean, Giants had 4 turnovers. Eagles had committed 4 turnovers. The Giants can score a point off, off the 4, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, wow. And they had their top 3 inside linebackers were out in the second half, and 2 of their top 3, didn't play at all the last couple weeks. So, the change on the defensive end is almost staggering how much better, they are, Jenkins in the secondary, and, Nolan Carroll's playing very well, and, Vinnie Curry, and Fletcher Cox has been tremendous, and, but yeah, Murray's coming around a bit at 80 yards and a little over 100 the last week. So the offensive line's been much better the last 2 weeks. So there certainly are things that are going the way you want them to go, but the quarterback, to be fair, remains a question mark.
So the defense, as you said, is playing great, especially that front 7 and Malcolm Jenkins in the secondary. Can this team win, succeed, win the NFC East, maybe even win a playoff game in spite of Sam Bradford?
I think, Chet, they can because it's the NFC East. I was joking that everybody knows who the NFC East champion is, and that's the Atlanta Falcons, because they were 4-0 against the NFC East. They're bumming. They're not playing any more NFC East teams because they're clearly the best team in the NFC East. But I think if they can establish, they can continue to run the ball. They had over 150 yards rushing each of the last 2 weeks. If they can do that, and the defense keep playing the way they are, essentially, you may be able to go, let's say, 9-7 and win the division if you just manage the game, if you don't make mistakes. And that's possible. It's possible that will be the case. But they're going to need Bradford to make some plays. I mean, one good thing Monday night is he did throw the ball down the field a couple times, hit Cooper a couple times. Now, he did underthrow, the one time, and even on the 132-yard gain, it would have been more had he not underthrown him. But he had been almost throwing exclusively to backs and tight ends and the receivers short passes, you know, the previous several weeks. And I do think you have to throw the ball down the field, even if you just throw it 40 yards and it's incomplete, just to keep the defenses honest. And if they can run the ball, that helps set up the play action and makes, you know, helps the receivers get open too. So, you know, I think they can. You know, look at the Panthers last year. I mean, the Eagles smoked them in here. They won a bad division, got a home game, and won a playoff game. Now the Panthers are a lot better, you know, this year. But, you know, that getting a home game and depending who the wild card team is, you know, and if they're playing better, you know, they could win a game. But, again, I think at some point your quarterback's going to have to make plays for you.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Tom, looking at the big picture, you know, I watched that game Monday night. I thought, this is just a god-awful football game. You know, fortunately the Eagles won, so, and all wins are good wins. That's always my saying. But we've seen the Eagles lay a couple eggs along the way already. The Giants, they're not good. Dallas is not good. We've seen all these teams just play some really bad games. What do you make of the NFC East as a whole and just the NFL as a whole? The games just, to me, they're just not that good anymore. There's a couple good teams, a couple really bad teams, and a kind of a bunch of bad teams in the middle, too.
Yeah, exactly. There's going to be several teams that are not playoff teams that are going to make the playoffs just because somebody has to. I agree, Bill. I think, you know, to be fair, had Romo not been hurt, I think the Cowboys would probably be the team to beat in the division, you know, winning the first couple games and have some games they could have won, you know, since, and just they're not getting very good play from the quarterback position. But, you know, it's all about how you're playing at the end of the season. You know, I mean, there have been 8-8 teams that have, you know, I think Seattle was 7-9 the 1 year, if I'm not mistaken, won the division, and everyone said it was a joke. And then won the first round of the playoffs mm-hmm. like 4 years ago.
Yep.
So, you know, it does happen. I mean, it's not certainly it's more the exception than the rule. But you do have, you know, 8-18 beating a 10-6 team if it's you know, a division winner, which gets the home field. You know, that has happened. But yeah, you know, I mean, realistically, there's only two or three teams in the NFC that, you know, you would think have real good chances to go to the Super Bowl. And it's probably about the same number in the AFC, really. It's like everybody else is fighting to, you know, best case scenario, maybe, you know, losing the second round or whatever. But that's how it seems to look at this point.
Hey, I want to talk about the receivers. Josh Huff has been mostly invisible this year. He had a good game against the Saints. Nelson Agholor has been a disappointment as a rookie. Now he's hurt. He missed the last game and is probably going to miss the next game, I believe. Is Riley Cooper, who you mentioned earlier, is he suddenly becoming a big play guy once again like he was so often 2 years ago?
Well, I mean, he was Monday night, but again, for the first time in a while, Chet, you know, Bradford threw the ball down the field. And he did it, if you remember, with Foles and, you know, and last year with Sanchez. You know, he had some success with – they had some success with deep balls to him. But it's almost like a process of elimination. Like you said, Huff is hurt every time you turn around. And Agholor, who, you know, at minicamp and at training camp, he was explosive. I really thought he could be a difference maker, and he's been it's only his rookie year. It's only six games, but he's been a significant, you know, disappointment. You know, they've been using two tight ends and splitting Ertz out because he's at that size. You know, he's a tough cover for a linebacker. He's too fast, and for a D-back, he's too big. And that has contributed, I think, the subpar performance by the receivers has not helped Sam Bradford. How many times, you know, Monday night with their miscommunication where he'd throw, even with Sproles on that one wheel route, he threw it behind him like he was going to go out toward the sideline instead of run a wheel route, which Sproles, you know, typically runs. And the interception that where he overthrew Cooper, there was miscommunication. Cooper stopped running and he threw it like he was going, you know, going on a fly pattern, and that was intercepted. So the receivers are not, they're not nearly as, and Jordan Matthews, you know, can't hold on to the ball. And, you know, he's a guy, you know, really should be a difference maker and should be their main weapon. So you see why, maybe you see why he is throwing to, you know, the tight ends and the backs a lot, because that group really has not performed up to expectations.
Now, while Aguilar has been a disappointment, on the other side of the ball, a rookie, Jordan Hicks, has just been phenomenal. He's one of the inside linebackers, and unfortunately he's been there and he has been a pleasant surprise. But now Kendricks is back at practice. D'Amico Ryans is probably going to play this week despite his little hamstring injury that cost him the second half on Monday night. So when they got all these guys healthy again, it probably won't be this week, but after the bye, when they have four healthy inside linebackers, how are they going to find playing time for everybody?
Yeah, that's a real good question, Chad, because, you know, that was one of the big storylines, is how are you going to find the playing time for, you know, the three guys, you know, for Ryans,
yeah,
Alonzo, and Kendricks. And now Hicks has come in and played so well. He really has. He hasn't missed a beat. He led him in tackles again, again Monday night. And I don't know. I mean, you really can only play two. Ryans is good against the run. He's not ideal, despite that. I mean, that turned the game around. It was 7-0. The Giants were driving. When he's, you know, wrestled that interception away, to me, the Giants were headed for a second touchdown.
Yep.
I think that changed the whole complexion of the game. But having said that, you know, Alonzo is probably the best of the established three guys as an all-around linebacker. Although the way things are going, Jordan Hicks is, would give him a run for his money. I would think that, you know, Ryans would leave the game in passing downs, but still, you have to, you can only have two linebackers out there at any, inside linebackers at any time. They were talking about moving Alonzo outside in Buffalo. He did not want to go outside, so I don't know. And you have Graham and, Barwin out there, who are, both having pretty good years, so it's not like you have a significant need there unless one of those guys gets injured. So I don't know what Bill Davis will do. That's a very good question.
Nice problem to have, though.
Yeah, it's better than having no inside linebackers, let's put it that way, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right. Hey, Tom, I guess we have to ask this because you're certainly much closer to the situation than we are. Any truth to the Chip Kelly to USC rumors?
I would think USC would be interested. Any major college would be interested in him, but I just don't think under the circumstances and the money he's making, and he doesn't have to recruit, he doesn't have to worry about the NCAA, and he's got full control here too. If they fire him, or if it doesn't work out, or there's a major rift between him and Lori or something, then maybe he would leave. But I think he thinks he's an NFL coach and he wants to prove he can win at the NFL level. So I don't doubt that they'll be interested, from any major program, whether it's Texas or USC or whatever. But I just don't see it happening at this point. In another year and a half or something, if things don't work out or there's trouble, perhaps. But I think he really wants to prove he can win at this level.
Tom, Bill and I will make our predictions in the second half of the show. But while you're still with us, what do you see happening Sunday night down in Carolina?
I'm probably the worst one to ask because, honestly, I don't think I've gotten an Eagles game right this year. I mean, they're so difficult.
Me neither, Tom.
Honestly,
yeah.
You think, they're really moving the ball. They're going to play well, and they lay an egg, and then they're not playing well, and you think, oh, geez, even the Saints. I picked the Saints. Saints would come off a win over the Cowboys. probably wasn't a good pick. And then this week I thought, Eli's playing much better and he throws that horrible pick six oh my goodness. Logically I would say the Panthers would win, although they're undefeated. I believe the line is 3. But I'll take the Eagles because I'll do the opposite of what I think because it seems like maybe that would work better because this team is so hard. I can tell you, week 8, that they will not lose because they'll be on a bye. But other than that, I can't guarantee you much of anything, guys.
Yeah, it is tough to figure out this team, that's for sure. All right, Tom, let's turn our attention to the 76ers now as they prepare to open the regular season next Wednesday night. Now, before we talk about their prospects, I know how Brett Brown feels about it, but what can you tell us about how much validity there is to that weekend SI.com story about Joel Embiid's immaturity, maybe some laziness on his part, and the report that there's some frustration in the Sixers' offices with the Sam Hinkie rebuilding process? What about all of that?
I think, and Brett Brown has said this in terms of the rebuilding process. He has said, repeatedly that he did think they would be farther along. I mean, if you want to take a glass-half-empty approach, you could say that after three drafts, you have two legitimate, healthy NBA starters on the team, and that's five picks of number 11 or higher. That's a glass-half-empty view, but honestly, with Embiid hurt, Okafor and Noel are NBA starters. Beyond that, you could argue Covington. I would say Covington is probably more of a sixth man on a good team, or a bench shooter type guy. Stauskas has been hurt. You know, he's going to miss Friday, so he will not have played the whole preseason. So it's going to take a while probably to figure out what you have, you know, with him. Is he a starter? You know, can he defend at this level? Can he shoot consistently, make three-pointers and jumpers? And, you know, those things all remain to be seen. So as for Embiid, you know, I don't doubt that Embiid is, we've been told some of this stuff, but I don't doubt that Embiid is, you know, a little bit strong-willed and, you know, wants to do what he wants to do. I'm sure he's frustrated at, you know, not being able to play and then having to have another surgery, missing another year. He feels like, you know, his foot was getting better and he was getting to the point, if you remember, Sixers CEO Scott O'Neill went on the radio in June and said he was going to play. He's going to play in the Summer League before. And Brett Brown would not say that because you just never know, because he never got to the point where he played full court, 5-on-5 scrimmaging. And to me, if you don't get to that point, it's too premature to say anything because, you know, let's say he's 275 pounds, you know, the pounding, you know, in the course of a game, if he plays 30 minutes, that's probably 4 or 5 miles he's running up and down the court. The pounding on a little bone in your foot on a man that big, you know, is significant. And, you know, that's what caused Yao Ming's career to end. Bill Walton, you know, some other people were afflicted, you know, with the same thing. So I don't doubt that he, is not always following what they want to do. And if he doesn't feel like doing something, I wouldn't be surprised if he expressed that, you know, to them. He's a 21-year-old kid, and he's frustrated, and he's not this is not the way he envisioned his career going, and, you know, you don't know if he's ever going to play. I mean, there's no guarantees at this point.
Now, you mentioned the two healthy big guys, Noel and Okafor. I'll tell you, I'm excited about watching these two guys. Some critics will say, well, they're too similar to one another, but I think it's going to be fun to watch them develop. You know, Noel in his second full season, Okafor, the rookie. A lot of people think he's going to be the rookie of the year. What do you expect from these two guys playing together?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of an adjustment, you know, offense. It really at both ends. I mean, Noel was a 5 most of last year, so he was, you know, able to be a shot blocker inside. A lot of teams have stretch fours, you know, the Kevin Loves, the guys who play power forward but go out to the three-point line, which means Noel will have to be chasing them. Okafor, you know, I think is a real weapon offensively, you know, with his low post skills and ability to command a double team, which should help create open shots for, you know, guys like, the slashers like Jakar Sampson and those guys, and the shooters like Covington and, if he gets healthy, Stauskas. Noel's had to learn to play at the foul line, the top of the key, trying to develop, you know, more of his mid-range game. But, you know, that could end up working. Defensively, Okafor, I think, still needs to, you know, develop. I think he still needs to get in a little better shape, still work on his quickness and hit the boards a little bit more, because he's got to be, you know, the anchor in there, especially when there are the other team, as I said, has a David West, guys who are powerful, always like to play at the high post. So he's not in that basket area, you know, able to affect things the way he did last year. So I think it's going to be an adjustment, but I think there certainly is a chance that it will work, and it could work well if everything falls into place and, you know, Noel and Okafor continue to develop and, you know, adapt well. I mean, unfortunately, they really didn't play that much in the preseason, where they both had, you know, respective injuries. They each missed a couple of games and missed some practice time. So, you know, they're really kind of just starting to get familiar with each other. And that will, you know, process will continue, you know, into the regular season.
Well, Tom, if you look at the present 20-man roster, the 20 guys that are left, you only have Carl Landry on that roster that is older than 24 years old. And he also makes $6.5 million. I don't know where I missed that somewhere along the line for a guy that averages 23 minutes a game, but I guess that's beside the point. My question to you is, can you actually win and be successful in this league without some, let's call it, senior leadership?
Yeah, that is a concern. You're right. There's nobody with more than 3 years of NBA experience than Carl Landry, and he's going to miss probably at least the first 2 months as he recovers from hand surgery. So, and I don't know how much he's going to play. It's possible, and he's the only, other than Okafor, he's the only sort of legitimate big guy body. You know, I think they list him as 6'8". He's probably closer to 6'6", but he's got a, you know, he's probably about 250 pounds. I mean, he's got a solid, you know, build and kind of a low post defender banger, which they really don't have on this team. But I said from the start, even when they drafted Carter Williams, I thought that it was a mistake not to have a veteran backup point guard for him to work with in practice and to learn from, to develop good habits, you know, to be able to ask questions to somebody who's done it before, who's not going to play a lot, but who's been a, you know, who's sort of maybe on the end or the downside of his career. You know, I think you need some veterans around just to, I mean, they're so young, they don't know any better. You know, media day, they were talking, you know, 3 weeks ago about making the playoffs. Why would they not say that, even though, you know, I think 21 or 22 wins is probably, you know, might be the ceiling for this team. But why not say that? You know, I mean, you don't want to limit yourself. They'll find out soon enough probably how realistic that is, given their inexperience and, you know, the lack of a, you know, a legitimate starting point guard and, you know, some of the holes on the roster and some of the question marks.
Hey, you mentioned the backcourt. That is a real concern right now. Tony Roten, still hurt, probably won't be back till late November, maybe even early December. Stauskas hasn't yet played. He's still hoping to be there for opening night. But, you know, you can't just expect to throw him in at the start of the season and have him ready to go and be ready to contribute. Kendall Marshall, the other guy that they acquired to play and contribute, he's still hurt. Who are we going to look at in the backcourt? Is it going to be Isaiah Cannon, Thompson? What do we have? Samson?
Yeah, I think probably to start the season, it'll probably be Cannon as a starting point guard. Kendall Marshall, I think, will probably be the starting point guard when he's healthy, but he's probably not going to be back till maybe mid-late November at the earliest, and maybe later than that. Like Roten, he's recovering from a torn ACL. He's a pass-first point guard. He's not a real good shooter, but he's a distributor, has some NBA experience with the Lakers, and had a pretty good year 2 years ago with them. So, I think Jakar Sampson, you know, has been starting at the two. They like him because he's athletic. He's a slasher, and he's a more of a defensive-minded guy. And then Covington at the three with Noel and Okafor. You know, depending how it goes with Stauskas, I think the thought was he would get the first crack at the starting spot, but he, you know, suffered that stress reaction of his right tibia the third day of training camp, which is 3 weeks ago. You know, so he really hasn't done much. And, you know, they're hoping he'll be ready for the regular season, but with no games under his belt, you know, I think his role would be limited, and, you know, it would take him some time. So, yeah, the backcourt certainly remains up in the air and really a work in progress. I mean, they have six point guards in camp, and probably three make the team, maybe four, only because if Roten and Marshall start the season injured, you'd only have Isaiah Cannon as the only point guard on the team, and then you'd have to use Stauskas, who hasn't played at all at the two, try to use him as a backup point guard, which he really hasn't done much of in the NBA at all. And Jakar Sampson would be the emergency point guard, but that is not a, you know, a recommended way of doing things. So they may have to, you know, keep a point guard maybe for the month of November, a fourth point guard, just so they have another, you know, person to, you know, to be able to use at that position and play 15 minutes a game or something like that.
Hey, Tom, as the plan continues, I think the last time we talked to you, we asked you if you thought the plan was on schedule or not. I think you said you thought it was probably a little bit behind schedule, but with the whole handful of four or five possible first-round draft picks that we could have in next year, is this another year? I don't like to use that tank word, but is this another year where we just don't play very well and we hover around the bottom all season long?
Well, I mean, I think if you look at the talent, as I said, they don't have a lot of NBA starting caliber players. I don't think Brett Brown is tanking. I don't think the players are tanking, but I think when you're overmatched, you know that if you don't play a very, very good game and make a few mistakes, you realize you're probably not going to win. So I think it's a year. And don't forget, they have the option to switch picks with the Sacramento Kings as part of that Stauskas trade. So that would mean, and that's after the lottery. So if the Sixers have a better year or worse year than the Kings, and the Kings end up with a higher, better pick than the Sixers would flip-flop with that. So, you could potentially have four picks, with the Lakers, with Miami, and with Oklahoma City. But again, they had this year, start training camp this year, they had four players from the previous year's training camp who are healthy that were back. So, I mean, you can say, well, we have these guys here, and, Covington came during the season, and Aldemir came during the season, and Cannon came during the season. But, they're essentially starting over, for a large part. I mean, Okafor, is the guy. I mean, he's their, probably their best player. They certainly hope he's their best player, who's healthy anyway. So, it's going to take time. And as I said, people say Kevin Durant, his rookie year, won 19 games. And there's nobody here that's Kevin Durant's caliber. So, I don't think you can expect 30 wins. I think Vegas has him at 21.5. And I think that number is, very realistic, and fair at this point.
So we shouldn't expect a playoff berth this year, but maybe next year, because as Bill mentioned, they have all those picks next year and likely – well, hopefully, at least, the return of or the coming of Dario Saric. Are they going to get him, and how good will the team be next year if everything breaks?
Well, it all starts with Embiid. If Embiid can be held, I mean, I think they bring him along slowly. If they're fortunate enough to have him play next year and maybe have him play 20 minutes off the game, I think at this point they would love to have him 20 minutes a game off the bench. He's the only guy on this roster right now, I think, who could be potentially a star, because what he could do at both ends and how athletic he is, if he's healthy, and that is a huge if. Saric, I think, is a power forward, probably like a first guy off the bench. I could see, whether it's in whatever combination of Embiid, Okafor, if Embiid's healthy, Okafor and Noel, two of those guys starting, I could see Saric being a 20-minute-a-game guy, at least to start with, power forward. Noel will start at power forward, but he's also their backup center. So I think the idea this year is that Okafor will start, come out of the game maybe halfway through the first quarter. Whoever the backup four is, whether it's Rashawn Holmes or rookie Rashawn Holmes or Furkan Aldemir, whoever comes in, Noel moves over to center, and they kind of work things that way. It remains to be seen. There's a lot of things, have to see, what happens and, how these guys develop and, did they get a good rapport with each other? As I said, the biggest thing, though, still is Embiid. If he does not come back, I don't, even in the East next year, I don't know you can expect rookies unless they get, the next Kevin Durant or Tim Duncan or LeBron James. And there have been three of those guys at that caliber in the last 20 years coming in the draft.
Tom, that leads me to my final question for you before we let you go. Now, we're not playing 10-5 this time with you, but if we had been, this would have been one of your questions. Next fall, what's more likely to be a reality? Sam Bradford back at quarterback for the Eagles or Joel Embiid ready for regular season basketball with the Sixers?
Well, that's a really good question. I will say, by a hair, I will say Sam Bradford. Just because he is in the last year, and there still is time for him to develop, get better, get more comfortable, make a difference. Embiid, I mean, obviously everybody hopes that he's back. It's just such an unknown at this time. To me, it's more of an unknown than the Bradford situation. So I will say Bradford by a nose.
Very good. Well, Tom, I think we have used every bit of our time with you, and we appreciate you taking the time to be with us.
All right, guys. Anytime. You take care.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, Tom. Thanks again.
Sure.
Hope we can do it again.
Sure. Sounds good.
Okay, great. All right, Chet, man. That's good stuff right there. Lot to get to. We'll get back on that a little bit here as we get through our trivia and our break. We'll talk a little bit more about that and the Eagles as well. So let's get our trivia question out there tonight, Chet. And this is for the first correct answer. We'll win the autographed 8x10 black and white photo of the 1960 Eagles, signed by the newest member of the Eagles Hall of Fame, Maxie Bond. Also Eagles Hall of Famer, the late Tom Brookshire, Billy Ray Barnes, Bob Pellegrini, Riley Gunnels, and also former Eagles coach who was a member of that team as well, Eddie Kayat. And that picture is courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles. And, Chad, I'll tell you what, I posted that on Facebook, and, man, what a great piece that is.
Yeah, that is nice. And good to see Maxie Bond in the Eagles Hall of Fame now. He was a great player who was underappreciated by a lot of people, but he had some very good years with the Eagles in the 60s.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you remember, I've been saying all along, Maxie Bond and Jerry Kramer, the two guys that ought to be in Canton, that not only in their team's Hall of Fame, but in Canton as well.
Yep.
Okay, well, here's the phone number for shopfordiskisses.org phone line, 929-477-2855 to answer the trivia question. And Chet, I shared the trivia question with you a little bit earlier. Is this not the simplest one that I've come up with yet?
Yeah, this is a pretty easy one. I knew this one right away before checking the answer. So yeah, this is an easy one. We need a winner here tonight.
This is the easy one. Okay. After six games, the Eagles have thrown 9 touchdown passes. 2 different guys are in the lead with 2 TD receptions each. Can you name them? So we need 2 names to win the prize. Okay? Again, our shopforkisses.org phone number to answer the trivia question is 929-477-2855. I'll read it one more time. After 6 games, the Eagles have thrown 9 touchdown passes. 2 different guys are in the lead with 2 TD receptions each. Can you name them? Okay, Chet, let's take a break. Thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Well, Chip, let's go a little bit and talk some more about the Eagles. And I want to turn around and hit you with your own question that you hit Tom with and get your opinion. Do you think the Eagles can win with Sam Bradford, a quarterback?
Well, I kind of agree with what Tom said. I think they can win the division, and that's mainly because the division is just so weak. We've been saying for the last couple of weeks that 9-7 may very well win this division. So, yeah, they can win the division with Sam Bradford, even throwing picks and making some bad decisions. But I can't see them winning a playoff game. Well, maybe they could steal one, but I can't see them winning more than one playoff game unless things drastically improve at the quarterback position. So that's my answer. They can, you know, have some modest success, but you're not going to go far with him making those kind of decisions that he has over the first 6 weeks.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at the statistics. You know, everybody says statistics don't lie, but sometimes they do lie. You know, you look at the eye test and you see the things that you saw on Monday night and you saw the week before, but then you look at his stats. I was looking at this as I was getting ready for the show, and, you know, he's throwing 63.2%, which you would think, 250 yards a game, 63.2%. Now, obviously, you have that big 9 in the interception category that really makes it look ugly. But, you know, and that drive drops his rating down to 80. But when you look at the fact that he's throwing 63.2%, when to Tom's point, a lot of them were dump offs.
Mm-hmm.
The big problem in the real big picture here is we're going to come the end of the season, regardless what happens this season, we're going to need a quarterback.
Yeah, and I did not like Tom's answer to that last question that I posed about which is more likely to happen, Sam Bradford back at quarterback or Joel Embiid ready for the regular season next year. I don't want to see Bradford back next fall. I got to be honest.
I hear you. And the other thing I think, and we didn't get to this with Tom, but I and I'm one that's been beating the drum in the other direction here quite a bit, but I won't say it was because the Giants were just absolutely god awful, which they were, but the Eagles defense played pretty darn good, and so I'm going to take it as the Eagles created a lot of that. And then the Giants were just horrible. But got to give a shout out to the Eagles defense.
I'll tell you, after that first drive, they were amazing. I got a little scared when that first drive, 8 plays, 80 yards, the Eagles defense pretty much non-existent. I was a little worried. Then they started the second drive the same way, and then D'Amico Ryans just really turned that game around with that strip that they called an interception. That was a huge play because the Giants were driving and were, at least going to get a field goal, and then he made that play. That was absolutely a killer for the Giants, and the Eagles, of course, just dominated from there, particularly on defense. I was really impressed with that entire D the other night, not just the front seven, but even the coverage in the secondary. I know you can say that the Giants' star wide receivers were banged up with bad hammies or whatever, but give the D credit. They played really well, and even the $63 million man, Byron Maxwell, has played better now the last couple of weeks. So things are starting to come together. The linebackers have been great. Fletcher Cox, Benny Logan up front have been dominating. And, yeah, even your boy Brandon Graham with a nice game the other night, Bill, admit it.
A little bit. At least they called his name. At least they called his name this week. You did realize that he was out there.
Made a couple of plays.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, the other thing I wanted to toss out there for you is the Giant, well, to the Eagles' offense, even with all the problems they had, but they had two situations there where the Giants, let's see, they roughed the passer when they should have had the Eagles off the field, and the Eagles took advantage of that. The Giants would have had the ball in great field position. They gave the Eagles another chance. The Eagles drove right down and scored. And then they turned around and roughed the kicker, and then the Eagles turned around, drove right down the field and scored. So as the Giants were making mistakes, the Eagles took advantage of it, and that's what good teams do, or that's why teams win anyway, put it that way.
Yeah, that's what you want to see. They did take advantage of mistakes, and all those turnovers that the Eagles had offensively, the defense then came through and stopped the Giants. So the D really came up big, and I was really impressed with that. The question is now, can they carry this, turn it into a positive going forward, build a little momentum? Huge game Sunday night. I know it's probably not a must game. If you're going to afford to lose a game, maybe this is the one because – a loss puts you at 3-4, and at worst, you're one game out in the East, and then you got a lot of crucial games coming up after that, and theoretically some easier games, so we'll see about that. But, boy, if they could steal a win Sunday night, they would really be on a bit of a roll, 3-game winning streak, and then 2 weeks to rest up before they play again. So, boy, I know it's only Wednesday, but I can't wait for Sunday night already.
Absolutely. Why not? Hey, when you're winning, it's all good. Well, hey, we have a whole board full of callers here to answer this trivia question. So what we're going to do, we're going to take the first one that called in and bring them on, and let's see who we have. Hello, welcome to the show. Who do we have to answer the trivia question?
Oh, you got the man, the myth, and the legend, Chris Furman.
Oh, geez. What are you doing on there,
Bill?
Son? Well, I haven't seen him in 3 months, Chet.
Wow.
Just living the life here in North Carolina.
Well, hey, somebody got to work. But you got an answer to this trivia question?
I'm going to go with Riley Cooper and Brent Celek.
They are correct. Riley Cooper and Brent Celek are the answers with a whopping 2 touchdown passes out of 9. Jordan Matthews, Josh Huff, Miles Austin, DeMarco Murray, and Ryan Matthews all have 1, and these two guys have 2.
For a Furman, he's a smart guy.
Well, he is. He must have actually watched the games when I'm thinking he was sleeping all those years.
I'm trying to figure out how you're tied for first place and only have 2 receivers with 2 touchdowns.
spreading it around.
That's why I thought it was a good trivia question when I put it together.
Yeah.
Yep.
Makes you wonder.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing I thought is Celek has 2 touchdown catches and he only has 5 pass receptions.
And I believe that was all
that was kind of the trick question, the trick of that question right there.
Making them count.
That's right. All right, Chris, I will get Carl your address, and I will have this sent to you, and hopefully I get to see you sometime soon.
Sounds good. You guys have a good one.
Take care.
Okay, see you. Well, how about that, Chet?
Furman's all over the country.
Who would have thought that?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, let's slide over right quick. Let's talk Flyers for a minute. They were back in action last night. They lost to Dallas 2-1. Played pretty good after being off for a week. And they have a tough game tonight against Boston, getting ready to start. Steve Mason was in the Nets last night. He is not going to be in the Nets tonight. And last week you mentioned about a possible goalie controversy. What do you think?
Yeah, there's no controversy, at least not yet. I mean, Neuvirth played great last week, and that was good to see, but I did not expect him to be in the goal last night, and he wasn't. It was Mason. Mason is still the guy to go to when he's there, when he's healthy. So, you know, they gave him a shot, as he should, and he played well. He gave up 2 goals. They lost, and now they play again tonight, and so Neuvirth is getting the start. And let me, at the same time, criticize the NHL schedule makers. The Flyers played 4 games in 7 days to start the season, and then, after Neuvirth plays those 2 great games, the team is off for 6 straight days. Who makes these schedules? That's just crazy. But, I'm not surprised Mason was in there last night. Yeah, exactly. 2 in a row after being off for 6 days. Crazy.
Yeah.
Now, there's no controversy, not yet, anyway.
Watched that game last night, and I thought Mason actually made some nice saves, and I thought he played pretty well, and I thought the Flyers played pretty well.
Yeah, the one concern, as I talked about last week, was the Flyers just might not have a whole lot of offense, and that's rearing its ugly head. They're just struggling to score. So, you know, 2-1 last night, I said they may have a lot of 2-1 games this year. You just got to hope that you're on the right side of that score.
Absolutely. Hey, what did you think or did you see where – our buddy Zach Rinaldo basically put out a challenge to the Flyers saying, is there anybody over on that bunch that wants to get it on tonight?
Oh, wow. I did not hear that. But he'll be looking for a little action, I'm sure. So that'll be fun to watch. I guess the game is out on 8 o'clock on Wednesday as we speak here. Good old Zach. Not surprised.
Yeah, I guess they were talking to him about the game and you know, talking about he has no friends on any team. You know, he goes to play, which, you know, that's all good. But then he couldn't just stop there. He had to take it that one sentence further and says they don't have anybody over there that wants to deal with me.
I was never a Zach Rinaldo fan. You may remember that. I thought he was, you know, a fan favorite for a lot of people, but I was just never really a big fan. I didn't think he contributed that much. There's not a whole lot of fighting in hockey anymore, so I didn't really see a need for him on the team, so I'm kind of glad he's gone, to be honest.
Well, and, you know, I kind of liked him. I liked the energy he brought. He wasn't a very good hockey player, but I did think he brought a lot of energy to the ice, though, when he was out there. But, hey, I also want you, you know, what your thoughts were on the first firing in the NHL already. That certainly didn't take long as Columbus made a move and John Tortorella just doesn't go away. He's like that bad nickel, just keeps on showing up.
Yeah, that is a rather sudden move, almost reminiscent of the Petr Laviolette firing 3 games into the season a few years back. I guess there's a lot of impatience in the NHL.
Absolutely. It's all about winning now, isn't it? Hey, yep. I had one more topic I wanted to talk to you about, and let's talk Temple House. They're going prime time on Halloween night on ABC against the Fighting Irish in a sold-out Lincoln Financial Field.
Boy, that is going to be quite an atmosphere, Bill. The Owls now ranked number 22 nationally and, for now at least, still undefeated against the one-loss Notre Dame team that has an incredible fan base, as you know. National TV, now I won't be there, but that is absolutely must-see TV. I just hope the Owls go into that game undefeated. As you know, they got a game in between now and then.
Yeah, they play tomorrow night. It's an ESPN2 game. They're in East Carolina, in Greenville, North Carolina, and you know, they've got some passionate fans down there, too. That's a pretty cool place. And Thursday night game, ECU is only 4-3, but I promise you, like all these other national televised games, especially midweek games, these fans get all fired up. It's like the Super Bowl for them. And you know, but I think if the Owls can win this, and boy, their defense is solid. They're playing great defense. But if they can win this game, what would you think about game day showing up in Philly for the Owls? How cool would that be?
Yeah, how about that? Now, Matt Rhule assured us that they're not going to overlook this game. They're not going to take ECU for granted. They're not going to look ahead to Notre Dame. And I believe him, but, you know, stranger things have happened, so I wish the Owls luck, and I really do hope they beat East Carolina. And, you know, that's going to be so exciting when they are undefeated, we hope, playing Notre Dame on Halloween night.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing to keep in mind, too, is you have look-aheads before, but then you have those flat games after, because sitting behind Notre Dame is Memphis, who just rolled Ole Miss last week. And who are actually ranked higher than the Owls. So this is a big three-game stretch for Temple, and, you know, certainly hope they can win two out of three, but obviously we want them to win all three, but this is a tough little patch here. We'll see how good they are.
Yep, I'm a Penn State guy, but I do wish the Temple Owls a lot of luck. I hope they do win them all.
Me too. Hey, Chet, before we do our pick-a-pool update, I wanted to give a shout-out to our friend Carl Henderson over there at Carl's Cards and Collectibles on that really great piece on Brian Westbrook that Comcast Sportsnet did with Carl. And as the focus of the piece, that was a great job by the Big C. What'd you think of that when you saw it?
You know, when Carl mentioned that he was going to be on, I thought it was just going to be like a passing shot of Carl in the store with Westbrook, or maybe one soundbite from Carl about B. West. But no, that was a full 5 minute or so segment with Carl talking about Brian. Great stuff, and we are real happy for Carl. But, you know, as I told him, now he may end up at the table in the middle of the store signing autographs. He's going to be suddenly famous.
Well, yeah, and I told him the stepping stone to this big show on Sportsnet was him being on Philly Press Box Radio.
Exactly. We're very happy
for
Carl.
I am too. And you know, as well as anybody, Carl does a great job of supporting us, and I was glad to see it. But I do want to talk to him. I've just been real busy this week with work and some other things, but I want to talk to him about that bowed up pose there with the arms folded, where he was muscling
yeah.
up. I thought, whoa, look at the Big C,
looking like a tough guy. Yep,
that's right. But hey, it's great for Carl, and we wanted to give him a shout out and tell him we're real happy for him, and that's good stuff, especially on Comcast Sportsnet. Certainly can't hurt business, and it was a great piece on Brian Westbrook as well.
Yeah, it really was.
Okay. Well, hey, let's get to this week's winner of the Philly Press Box Radio Pick 'em Pool. Bulldog 76, Dave Capper was the winner. Chet, Dave opted not to gloat. It's just not his style, so... But he becomes the sixth different winner, and he had 12 wins. Our buddy Danny Bevins had 11. Nine others had 10 wins, none of which were me, again. For the season, Billy Furman was the leader going into the week, and he had one miserable week. So he lost his season lead to Carl Henderson. Billy's second, one game behind. Four others are two games behind Carl, one of which is you, Chet. And on top of that, there are 16 players within five games of the league.
I'm ready to make my move. And it is, yeah, it's very competitive, and that's the way we like it. It's not much fun if there's one guy running away with it. So I hope it does stay close all the way through.
Yeah, and you know, I thought it was pretty good because as Billy was picking up games, and he went up to a two-game lead, and, you know, you start to think, well, it's getting wide. But then all of a sudden, just it only takes one bad week to throw you out. And in his case, he actually lost three games, the two that he was ahead plus the one he's now behind. It doesn't take long, and there's a whole lot of players that are still in this mix.
You know, I just thought of something. You mentioned the season-to-date leader is Carl Henderson. Now, the big prize at the end is something supplied by Carl. So if Carl wins, does that mean we're going to have to, like, fork out and buy something for Carl?
Well, no. I was thinking that what happens is then the Brian Dawkins helmet that Carl has stored in his store for us, is to then put it in his truck and take it to his house.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess so.
Right?
I guess.
I mean, unless he decides he just wants to sell it off and make a couple dollars out of it, but I'm not thinking that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a nice prize, I'll tell you.
Absolutely. All right, well, hey, there's no bye week for us, so we'll be right back picking them. Game tomorrow night. Time to get going into week 7. All right, let's update the upcoming signings list across cards as we're talking, and couple more Broad Street Bullies coming. Chet, Rick McLeish, and Bob the Hound Kelly will be in the store October the 24th. And for the Eagles fans, just announced a couple current Eagles. November the 19th, Josh Huff and Cedric Thornton will be in the store. Never too early to start that Christmas shopping, my friend.
Never is.
That's right. No better place to do it than at Carl's Cards. You can get more information on the website at cards.com, on Twitter at Carl's Cards, or by calling the store 610-749-4696 or 4996. I'm sorry. All right, Chet, it's that time again to make our Eagles Fearless Prediction of the Week. You're up.
Well, remember back in week 3 when Logic said to go with the Jets, but I figured the Eagles were due to get off the schneid and get that first win. Well, they did. Well, now the Eagles are flying south to play an undefeated Carolina Panthers team that's coming off a big win over the Seahawks. Carolina is the home team, so it's favored by 3, but yeah, the Panthers have a solid defense, and quarterback Cam Newton is playing very well this year, I know. However, the Panthers are not that good. They haven't really played anybody else besides Seattle. That's tough. And they are due for a loss. And I'm sensing a little letdown after that big win over the Seahawks. So, they beat those birds, but not our birds. The Chet prediction, Eagles 20, Panthers 16. Mark it down.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't have all the same details in my head that you just ran off in your head, but I also like the Eagles this week, and I'm not really sure why I think this, but I think it might be time for that offensive eruption. I think the offensive line is playing much, much better each week. It's hard for me to believe they proved so much over the course of a week or two, but they have, and hats off to them for that. The defense is playing pretty good. I just have I have trouble feeling this team out because the Giants were just so bad. You know, I just can't figure that out. But, again, maybe the Eagles created that. So I am going to go Eagles 34, Panthers 21. 34-21
wow.
Eagles. I think this is
two
the week
pretty
they
good
busted.
Defenses. Good defenses.
Yep.
You're saying a pretty high-scoring game, 34-21. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go that way because I don't think Sam Bradford's going to be as bad this week as he was last week. You know, if he doesn't throw those interceptions, they put up, 45 the other night?
Let me say something, though. You just said in the Eagles beating the Giants are really bad. Well, you know what? The Giants had won the previous three games and could have been 5-0 if they didn't blow the first two. And when we beat the Saints by 22 or whatever, everybody said, the Saints stink, though. So really, you know, are you that excited about it? Well, the Saints went out 4 days later and beat an undefeated Falcons team. So, you know, maybe it's not so much that these teams stink as maybe the Eagles' defense is pretty darn good, and, you know, they're becoming a good team. So let's give the Eagles some credit here.
Absolutely. Hey, Chet, we have about one extra minute here. So what we going? I got a caller here, right quick. So let's grab them and then we'll get to our close. Okay.
All right.
Hello, welcome to the show. Who do we have?
You got the Big C. I had to call in.
Hey, Carl. The Big C. What's going on?
The TV star.
All this love, I had to throw it back your way. You guys are really pumping me up.
I'm just hoping you're not on a wireless headset. You got those arms all bowed up, crossed up, bowed up at us.
I have no clue what I was doing there. So,
it's great stuff. Great piece, and you did a great job with that, and it was a great piece on Brian Westbrook as well, for sure.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I had no idea, it was going to end up as good as it did, and I'm just honored, and just having a lot of fun with it, as you can see.
Yep.
Is it helping
good
business,
deal.
Carl? Is it helping your business this week?
You know what? Not yet, but every little bit helps.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I bet it will, because, I don't know what the Comcast Sportsnet in the Delaware Valley, how many homes they go to, but it's a bunch.
Oh, it's no doubt. I mean, it's a winner all the way around. But I just had – can I throw my 2 cents in on the Birds?
Yep.
Sure.
Who was the coach? Defense wins championships.
Oh yeah, I know that. I've said that a time or two.
I know that the offense looks miserable, but I'll tell you what, that defense is as good as it gets right now in the whole league. I mean, I got
yeah, they're looking
there.
Good. Looking good.
Yeah, I if we can correct a few of those mistakes. I think we're going to be okay. I love the defense. I mean, they're just making one play after another.
They are playing well, and they seem to be getting better. And, I think no one would have thought with all this linebacker problems that Hicks would step in and doggone he's playing like a Pro Bowler, and we were questioning whether they should even pick him, But he's doing a great job.
You were down three linebackers Monday night after D'Amico left the game.
Yep. Acho was playing from the waiver wire to the starting lineup.
Najee Good.
Imagine that.
No, that's it. Najee Good. That's it. No, I was thinking Acho. Yep.
Yeah.
All right, Carl. Well, we appreciate it, and certainly thanks for calling.
Thank you very much. Have a great night, guys.
Talk to you soon, Carl.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Well, hey, Chet, you've got about 30 seconds for a parting shot if you have one this week.
I'm going to sum it up. Glad to see our Philadelphia Eagles continuing to honor some of the team's great players from years gone by. Brian Westbrook and Maxie Bond both inducted into the Eagles Hall of Fame Monday night. Each of those guys certainly worthy. But on the postgame show the other night, then Seth Joyner was on with Michael Barkan and company. And Barkan pointed out, shockingly in my opinion, that Seth is not in the Birds Hall of Fame. As Tom McGinnis would say, are you kidding me? Now, I could rattle off all the stats, but come on. Seth Joyner belongs to the NFL Hall of Fame, and he's not even in the Eagles Hall of Fame. Fix that, Jeffrey Lurie. Put Seth Joyner and, in fact, his old teammate Clyde Simmons in the Eagles Hall of Fame next year.
I'm with you. No argument from me. All right. We're at the top of the hour. Let's thank our special guest, Calkins Media 76ers beat writer Tom Moore. Also, Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continued support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes. And our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chetchesco, this is Bill Furman. Hoping you enjoyed the show. We'll join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, October 28th at 7 p.m. You can listen through our Facebook page or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio and now on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.